without a working sander, the Hanesboro looks to alternatives. And the Haines Fire Department receives a donation for new AEDs. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Abby Collins. Those stories and more, up next. Haines has seen its fair share of winter weather in recent weeks. But recently, the borough has had to go without one piece of equipment that is key to maintaining the roads this season. The borough's sander broke last week.
The motor lost oil pressure, and so they shut it down.
That's Public Facilities Director Brad Ryan.
And we didn't drive it after that. It was up on Cathedral View, and we towed it back. And so we're just hoping that they shut it down quick enough not to ruin the motor. But we don't know that at this point.
He says they're still assessing the situation, and it's unclear right now when it will be back on the road. But not treating the roads hasn't been an option. In recent weeks, Haines has seen snow and rain resulting in some icy driving conditions. Ryan says they're using alternate methods for now.
We've hired a couple of local contractors to sand for us in the meantime, and we're trying to work out an arrangement with DOT to use their sand track as well. And then we also have CIA sander now in the back of our truck, and we're just waiting for some controls so that we can do a small sanding effort with a pickup style sander as well.
The borough's sander is in a dump truck. They do have another newer dump truck, but they're unable to attach the sander to that one. Ryan says while the borough is feeling the loss, the necessary work is still getting done well.
We certainly feel the loss in the sense that, you know, it costs us more money. And, you know, we have to do some arrangements with the private contractors, but they've been doing great. They show up, they're happy to be there, and man, they've been making quick work of it.
At this point, the borough has gone without its sander for about a week. They continue to work toward getting it back on the road. The Haines Volunteer Fire Department will soon be able to purchase more life-saving equipment with a donation from one local resident.
I guess I just want to thank Lucy for this donation that's going to benefit the community.
That's Haines Volunteer Fire Department Ambulance Captain Al Badgley. Recently, Lucy Harrell donated $10,000 to the department.
The fire department is kind of a avenue to make this happen, but we want to make sure that she is credited with potentially saving people's lives, not only this year, but for years to come.
The money is for automatic external defibrillators, or AEDs.
Which is a device that is used to determine whether someone's heart is in need of being converted from a lethal arrhythmia to a rhythm that will make the heart function properly.
Badgley says the tool is used in conjunction with CPR, increasing survival rates.
With just CPR for someone that's in cardiac arrest, the survival rate is somewhere in the neighborhood of 2 to 5%. If you put an AED in probably the first 2 to 4 minutes, you can increase that 2 to 5% to almost 15 to 20%.
And he says it can be even higher than that.
That is just with a bystander CPR. If you incorporate the full gamut of having trained personnel and advanced medical equipment coming to the scene within 4 to 6 minutes. Seattle has a success rate of over 50%.
Harrell's donation will allow the department to purchase new equipment to install AEDs in areas that are currently lacking the tool.
We're kind of looking at areas, possibly remote areas, maybe out in Mud Bay is a possibility, trying to get a couple more in the core of town, maybe have some at some of the churches or some areas where they have high volume of participants certain times of the year where they may not be locked.
But funds will also go toward maintaining existing AEDs and maintaining the new ones in the future.
A lot of times people donate an AED to the community, but what happens is 5 years from that, we have about a $500 replacement bill for a battery for that defibrillator, and sometimes that can be overwhelming when you have 10 of those going out simultaneously.
There are a number of AEDs around town already, but there are some gaps, like Mud Bay, where the department is looking for somewhere that an AED could be stored.
In the core of town, we're pretty good, but the thing is, you're looking for an area that has high access, but it has to be somewhat kept out of the cold. We can't keep an AED where it would be potentially get frozen because the battery will freeze.
Badgley says these are tools that can be used by anyone, but there's one important detail.
The key is to have AEDs and people know where they are versus, you know, if you have an AED and no one knows it's there, it's going to be kind of worthless for that use.
The department received news of the donation just before Christmas.
So it was a kind of a Christmas present for the fire department and for the community. It's not just the fire department that's benefiting with this. It's the community is going to benefit with this.
Badgley encourages community members to take a CPR class with the fire department to learn the most effective way to use the AEDs. Canadian officials say they'll stop polluted mine water from entering a salmon-rich river that flows into southeast Alaska. The work could include plugging up tunnels from British Columbia's decades-old Tulsiquitchief mine. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
The Tulsiquitchief hasn't operated since 1957. Two companies tried to reopen it during the past 20 years, but both failed. That's left a legacy of acidic water carrying pollutants into the Tulsiqua River. It's a tributary of the Taku River, a key source of salmon caught in southeast Alaska. Provincial officials had told the latest developer, Chieftain Metals, to clean up the site. After the company went bankrupt last fall, British Columbia sent inspectors to see what had been done. But it wasn't much. Mines Minister Bill Bennett says a government contractor took care of improperly stored chemicals and petroleum products.
They were not able before freeze-up to do anything about the settling pond that exists beside the river that captures the runoff from the hill that the old mine was built into.
He says experts will look into plugging leaking mine tunnels to stop the discharges into the pond, which leaks into the river. If that's not practical, he says they'll look at other options.
Even though the water that's been tested by both Alaska and British Columbia has shown no negative impacts on aquatic organisms, it's still against our rules for that water to be flowing into the Tulsiqua River. So one way or the other, we have to stop it.
I think there is actually some good news here and a change from past practices.
Chris Zimmer is Alaska campaign director for the group Rivers Without Borders. He says the tests Bennett mentioned were faulty and inconclusive. And he's been calling for a cleanup for years.
In the past, BC was simply saying we're going to let the mining companies come in, develop the mine, and clean it up. And I think now Minister Bennett realizes that after two bankruptcies, that this mine isn't one that's going to be developed, and BC is now going to have to take responsibility for the cleanup.
British Columbia acknowledges a new company could take over the Tulsiquitchief. It's in the hands of a Canadian firm that would like to recoup some of its investments. It could do that by selling the mine. But Bennett says such a developer would have to meet tighter standards.
We would need an ironclad commitment from any new buyer that they were going to do what's necessary immediately. And if we can't get that, then the government would act on the closure and remediation plan and just simply close the site down.
That's what transboundary mine activists, including Zimmer, want. But he says it's not as easy as it sounds.
Plugging up the mine to stop the movement of water is one thing. You could do that relatively cheaply and quickly. But the problem is eventually you will have cracks, water will start moving, and you'll be back to the acid mine drainage situation where you would need a water treatment plant.
And that would be costly. Chieftain did set up such a plant for a while, but determined it was too expensive to run without the mine opening and generating income. I'm Ed Schoenfeld, reporting in Juneau.
For KHNS News, I'm Abby Collins. Thanks for joining us this evening. You can listen to and read local news stories on our website at khns.org. We also have news and announcements on our KHNS Facebook page, so make sure you follow us there. We're always open to your comments and story ideas, so drop us a line at news@khns.org or reporter@khns.org.